fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger, unafraid, right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution, revolution, revolution. Radio!
Are you coming to the train, led by a man who wants to break the chains? Establishment is terrified, they can't control his reign. Let's meet this year on the Trump train. Are you coming to the train, where brave men called out for a wall built by crane? Media is terrified, they can't control his reign. Let's meet this year on the Trump train. Are you coming to the train, where brave men called out the fools who lead in vain? Lobbyists are terrified, they can't control our reign. Let's meet this year on the Trump train. Are you coming to the train? Wear a hat of hope, side by side with me. Make America great again, break the chains. Let's meet this year on the Trump train.
And we are going to be respected by the world again and not laughed at like we're all a bunch of stupid people being led by incompetent politicians. It's not going to go on any longer.
Are you coming to your train to take our great country back again? Join the revolution, break the chains. Let's meet this year on a Trump train.
We're going to win at the borders. We're going to win, and we're going to keep winning. And we are going to make America great again, greater than ever before. Greater than ever before.
March 3rd, 2024, you're listening to Revolution Radio, the best radio network on the internet, and this is Dr. Johnny keeping the truth alive, and I ask you to please be generous with your contribution to this network at freedomslips.org. We've got a special campaign going on right now. We're reaching out to you. We at Revolution Radio are in the midst of a fundraising event aimed at upgrading our streaming server equipment. This is a critical step for us to continue delivering the insightful, engaging content you rely on. Our goal is to raise $1,300, and we're inviting our valued community, that's you, to be part of this effort. Every contribution, no matter what the size, makes a difference. When you make your donation, please indicate that it's for the stream server to ensure that it supports this specific cause. We're here to keep the conversation going and delve into the truths that matter. And with your help, we can ensure that our platform remains strong and uninterrupted. Thank you so much for considering a donation and keeping Dr. Johnny on the air. You are now connected to the Master Survivor Beyond PhD Command Center, where Dr. Johnny with the Bald Eagle Eye is keeping a vigilant watch on Washington, D.C., our country, and our solar system. That's right. You are now listening to the Master Survivor, bringing you hope, health, and happiness, but most important of all, the truth about our world and providing the tools to help you survive and thrive. I'm your host, Johnny Delirious, laboratory naturopathic doctor, best-selling author, master survivor, and virus recovery expert. Dateline, March 1st, 2024. White Hats investigating the unstoppable blaze surging through the Texas Panhandle fought a pitched battle against renegade FEMA agents Thursday afternoon. A confrontation led to a firefight that left three agents dead and one begging the United States Marines to spare his life. Over the last week, a raging inferno has charred over a million acres of land, destroying 700 homes and killed or displaced thousands of head of cattle, vital to our nation's food supply. As of today, the fire has ruined 1,400 square miles of prairie land and is only 15% contained. The Biden regime has blamed the man-made climate change and unusual spate of warm weather last week as catalyst for the fire stove. Oh, it's global, warming, climate change. However, White Hats have a different working theory. The cabal started the fire intentionally for reasons not entirely clear, but Dr. Johnny will get to some more details. My source in General Eric Smith's office revealed that United States Army Cyber Command overheard a conversation between ranking State Department official and the Federal Emergency Management Agency supervisor in Oklahoma on Wednesday. My source wouldn't name the individuals, but he said their conversation included phrases like, "The fire is best thing ever happened to Texas," or "just let Texas burn," and that'll teach Governor Greg Abbott a lesson, phrases like that, and concluded with the FEMA official saying that he had already dispatched agents to the city of Fretch on the outskirts of the Smokehouse Creek fire. General Smith knew an immutable fact. Where FEMA goes, trouble follows. "We have too much bad blood with FEMA," he said. "They're an infestation like roaches. They're just hard to exterminate. Squash one and more scurry out." General Smith wanted to know where they were, what they were up to, so he sent small teams to different parts of the disaster area to get a closer look. By the time the Marines showed up, FEMA had already set up emergency relief centers at a church and a school gymnasium south of Grapevine Creek fire. The Marines discreetly investigated those locations for signs of federal treachery on the populace and were shocked to see FEMA personnel actually administering aid to dispatch and displaced citizens. FEMA had a triage center and had provided shelter and substance to the refugees. "It was un-FEMA-like," my source said, "and we were suspicious." However, Marines surveying damage near a Fetch met a face of FEMA, which they were very familiar with. While patrolling Highway 136 close to the Sandy Deuce fire and the eastern shore of Lake Meredith, the Marines encountered a four-man FEMA team trying to force an old rancher to vacate his undamaged property. The Marine witnessed the federal Gestapo shove the frail elderly man to the ground and rummage through his pockets and then move to intervene. They made a tactical approach and then commanded FEMA to unhand and step away from the bruised man, who seemed thoroughly confused by the situation. At that point, one FEMA agent, ostensibly the guy in charge, said FEMA had unilateral control and the disaster area of the disaster area and would treat military interlopers as enemy combatants. The lead Marine tried futilely to defuse the encounter. He gave the FEMA agents a chance to leave the premises unharmed, but the lead agent belligerently refused the overture and reached for a sidearm on his hip, a move that forced the Marine's hand. In an instant, two of the four FEMA agents fell dead, their bodies zipped by rounds of Marines' M4 carbines. The third agent died to Marine fire as he tried to take the rancher hostage. Meanwhile, the fourth agent had fallen to his knees and begged for mercy with his hands in the air, asking Marines to spare his life and saying he was just following orders. He was taken into custody. This was an unfortunate thing for FEMA. It's important to note that FEMA is bifurcated. It employs, 20,000, and about three quarters of them are corrupt to the core. The other one quarter is just people doing the job and working for what they consider a benevolent agency. But make no mistake, it's Diane Craswell calling the shots and causing the problems. I asked my source if White Hats had determined the cause of the fires, and he said, very bluntly, we have nothing definite, but we're looking at every avenue from someone tossing a match to a direct energy weapon, like they used in Maui to burn Maui, he said. Well, he was exactly correct. We have another direct energy weapon attack, starting fires all over North Texas. I say direct energy attack because you can see the typical telltale sign with houses in complete ash, yet green trees and plastic garbage cans beside the house are perfectly intact, yet the house is burned completely to the ground, and yet the tree and the plastic garbage can standing next to them is intact. And that's a typical sign of a direct energy attack. They take down the house, but all the other things are undisturbed. According to mainstream news, several large wildfires continue to tear through North Texas, in the panhandle, including one that has grown into the largest blaze in state history, the Smokehouse Creek Fire that ignited Hutchinson County, remained active as of Thursday morning, having burned an estimated of 1,075,000 acres, and that was just 3% contained at the time on Thursday evening, according to Texas A&M Forest Service. The flames, which cover an area larger than the size of Rhode Island, had spread across state lines, 1 million acres burnt in Texas and 25,000 acres burnt in Oklahoma. The East Amarillo Complex Fire, which burned also in Hutchinson County in 2006, had been the largest in state history, with just under 1 million acres, according to the Texas A&M Forest Service. Hutchinson County Public Engagement Coordinator Deidre Thomas confirmed that there was at least one wildfire-related fatality in the small town of Stoneynet, Texas, according to Amarillo ABC affiliate KV2. The Windy Deuce fire that ignited in Monroe County was also still active as of Thursday afternoon, having burned an estimated 142,000 acres, and it was 50% contained. The grapevine fire that ignited in nearby Gray County had burned an estimated 30,000 acres, and that was just 60% contained as of early Wednesday, according to the Texas A&M Forest Service. The raging wildfires have consumed swaths of the Turkey Creek and Turkey Track Ranch, a 120-year-old, 80-acre private property located along the Canadian River in the Texas Panhandle. The sprawling historic ranch has been up for sale and is listed at $180 million. The loss of livestock, crops, and wildlife, as well as ranch fencing and other infrastructure throughout our property, as well as other ranches and homes across the region, is, we believe, unparalleled in our history, managers of the Turkey Creek Ranch Family Group said in a statement Wednesday. Our early assessment estimates that Turkey Track Ranch has suffered and lost approximately 80% of our pastures, plains, and creek bottom vegetation. We continue to assess the total damage to other structures with the loss of livestock. Have you ever wondered who ordered the attack with these direct energy weapons? Well, it might surprise you that a recent two-term president is behind such schemes, just the same as he did in Lahaina, Hawaii, and Maui. I wish it were not true, but I watched a video where Barack Obama said he wanted to serve a third term in my basement, in my sweats, he said. And he was talking to Colbert in this interview. And now he's living his dream using Joe Biden as a cardboard cutout, person cutout, according to Victor David Hansen, who's familiar with the Obamas and their movements. Obama never moved the country as left as he wanted to, according to Victor Hansen. He was too timid. He felt that he wasn't yet ready. He would hurt his legacy if he didn't get reelected. It was too dangerous. So now, with Joe Biden, he's living his dream, says David Hansen. However, in November 2020, Barack Obama said to Stephen Colbert, and I saw it on tape myself, it was definitely Obama, and this wasn't a doctored tape, this was an interview with Stephen Colbert, and Obama said, well, I used to say, you know, if I could make an arrangement where I could have a stand-in, you know, a front man or a front woman, and they would have an earpiece in, and I would just, you know, be in my basement, in my sweats, looking at the stuff and could sort out and deliver the lines through the earpiece, but somebody else, you know, would be doing the talking and the ceremonies. I'd be fine with that, said Obama. And that's what he's doing right now, according to Hansen. The Obamas are running the country when my point is, he said, that they want Joe Biden the way he is because he's a construct, bumbling along as he is, and they cut out, they can blame everything on him and not blame Obama for all the policies that are taking place. And then they plopped him out there, and Obama stays in the basement, and they make him move once in a while, and then they run all the agencies, just like the Justice Department. Obama's responsible for the border. He's responsible for the total crime epidemic. He's responsible for the Justice Department, all those arrests of Donald Trump. He's pulling the strings, said Hansen. This is what he wanted, and Biden is very useful, he says, quote unquote. I will not review some of the spinoffs of Obama's dream, like a weaponized Department of Justice. They are going after Trump with ridiculous criminal charges, and they're going after the ones standing up for the people's rights. Case in point, Biden's Justice Department is suing Tennessee for protecting its citizens from HIV-positive prostitutes. I cannot make this stuff up. I'll repeat it. The Biden Justice Department is suing the state of Tennessee for protecting its citizens from HIV-positive prostitutes. This came from the Heritage Foundation, authored by Zach Smith, a senior legal fellow, Meese Center for Legal Studies, who is a senior legal fellow and manager of the Supreme Court and appellate advocacy program in Heritage Meese Center. Every state makes it a crime to intentionally injure someone, he said, like shooting or stabbing them without justification. That's why it's been a long been a crime in most states to intentionally infect someone with a disease, including a sexually transmitted disease. After all, the consequences of a sexually transmitted disease can be just as long-lasting and deadly as if a perpetrator shot or stabbed a victim. But apparently, the Biden administration disagrees, and led by the radical Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark, the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division is suing Tennessee for attempting to enforce a statute that is designed to protect the public from HIV-positive prostitutes. According to Clark and her cronies, Tennessee's attempt to protect citizenry is actually thinly veiled discrimination that violates Americans with Disability Act. In addition to Clark, the zealots who filed this lawsuit against Tennessee include Disability Rights Section Chief Rebecca Bond and Deputy Chief Kevin Krinsky, trial attorney Stephanie Berger, and trial attorney Ali Smanansky. A brief look through their resumes, even those of lower-ranking trial attorneys, shows that they've worked for various organizations that support far-left pet projects. For example, Berger previously spent several years working for the Empire State Pride Agenda, which disbanded after the then New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed an executive order protecting transgender rights. And Samosky previously worked or interned for the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of Boston, the ACLU of Pennsylvania, the Charles Hamilton Houston Institute for Race and Justice, and the MacArthur Justice Center, all these far-left occupations that she was embroiled in. These connections to the radical left shouldn't come as a surprise. The politicized left-leaning hiring practices within the Justice Department Civil Rights Division have been a long-standing problem. Only a full embrace of the far left's worldview could explain the filing of this otherwise inexplicable lawsuit. Passed in 1991, at the height of the AIDS pandemic, or the epidemic, AIDS epidemic, the Tennessee aggravated prostitution statute provides that a person commits aggravated prostitution when knowingly such a person is infected with HIV, the person engages in sexual activity as a business or as an inmate in a house of prostitution, or loiters in a public place for the purpose of being hired to engage in sexual activity. In other words, if a person knows, or you know, he or she has HIV and engages in a prostitution itself a crime, then that person faces harsher penalties. According to the Biden Justice Department, however, this is discrimination because it unfairly treats individuals based solely on their HIV-positive status and does not require prosecution entities to make any individualized determinations in order to achieve a conviction. But think that through. It's not discrimination to prosecute an alcoholic for driving while under the influence, and it's not discriminating to prosecute a drug addict for possessing or selling drugs. Tennessee isn't prosecuting or punishing people based on their status, but instead is prosecuting and punishing them based on their conduct and the risk of harm that conduct poses to the community. It's why most states prosecute armed robbery more harshly than unarmed robbery. Lawmakers view the former, the armed robbery, as posing a greater risk and being more harmful to the community. The same is true here. Of course, the Justice Department, the Biden Justice Department, doesn't have a sound legal argument against this. They simply allege that since the passage of Tennessee's aggravated prostitution statute, there's been significant progress in the understanding of the treatment of HIV. According to them, beliefs and assumptions that individuals with HIV would spread it or that having HIV is a death sentence are now outdated and unfounded. That may well be true, but as the same filing readily admits, that largely depends on following proper protocols for medication and treatment. Furthermore, Tennessee isn't targeting the HIV population at large, only those who are infected and are engaging in a crime of prostitution where the transmission risk is likely much higher than in other settings. Why shouldn't Tennessee be able to punish criminal conduct with aggravated circumstances such as these more severely? After all, no one is seriously contending that engaging in prostitution while having HIV positive is less dangerous or less harmful than doing so without. The Justice Department filing identifies complainant A as one of the victims of Tennessee's supposedly discriminatory law. According to the Justice Department, complainant A is a black transgender woman who lives in Memphis, Tennessee. This individual had HIV, knew it, and engaged in prostitution near a church or a school. Tennessee charged this individual with aggravated prostitution, which, of course, comes with subsequent sex offender registration requirements and other collateral consequences because Tennessee simply enforced the law. The Biden Justice Department now says the state discriminated against this individual. In fact, they're asking the court to prohibit any further enforcement of Tennessee's aggravated prostitution statute and remove individuals from the sex offender registry who have been convicted of aggravated prostitution, terminate reporting requirements for individuals on the sex offender registry and who have been convicted of aggravated prostitution and expunge their records, and expunge all their records and provide compensatory damages, money, paying money, you know, because they were, you know, infringed on. And others, the Justice Department deemed that are harmed. Not only do they want their record expunged and all criminal charges dropped, but they want Tennessee, this is part of the lawsuit, to pay them money because they've been discriminated against for spreading HIV in an illegal act of prostitution, which is more, you know, with HIV, it's aggravated prostitution. With all the problems facing the Biden administration this year, their dedication to extorting everyday Americans to advance this radical social agenda is astounding. Americans deserve and should expect more from a department that's supposedly dedicated to seeking justice and protecting the individual. Dr. Johnny Craw cries foul. Enough is enough. The FDA is supposed to be working to protect our health too, but instead, it's allowing more toxins in our food. Case in point, this is from the Environmental Working Group, February 15, 2024, in their report. A new Environmental Working Group peer-reviewed study has found that chloramaraquat, a little-known pesticide, like, you know, one of its cousins is paraquat, but this chloramaraquat is another pesticide. You know, paraquat they use to spray on marijuana, and that, you know, harms smokers, if they happen to get that marijuana, that harms the smokers permanently for life. But this chlorimariquat is a pesticide that 4 out of 5, 80% of the people tested, it affects them deadly. It's a deadly toxin. The groundbreaking analysis of chlorimariquat in the bodies of people in the U.S. rings alarm bells because the chemical is linked to reproductive and developmental problems, and animal studies suggesting that the potential for similar harm to humans. The Environmental Working Group research published February 15th in the Journal of Exposure Science and Environmental Epidemiology tested for the presence of chlorimariquat in urine collected from 96 people between 2017 and 2023. The chemical was found in the urine of 77 of them. We detected the chemical in 92% of oat-based foods purchased in May of 2023, including Quaker Oats and Cheerios. The fact that too many people are exposed raises concerns about its potential impact on the public health. Since animal studies link chlorimariquat to reduced fertility, harm to reproductive systems, and altered fetal growth, the babies come out deformed. Environmental Protection Agency regulations allow the chemical to be used in ornamental plants only, not food crops grown in the U.S., but its use is permitted on imported oats and other foods sold here. Many oats and oat products consumed in the United States come from Canada. Chlorimariquat is not allowed on oats sold in the U.S. before 2018, when the Trump EPA gave the first-time approval for some amount of the chemical on imported oats. So they may spray it in Canada, and if we pick it up on the import, well, if we pick up a little bit, okay, on the import, we'll let that go through. But the Biden administration in 2020 increased the allowable amount. So you do feel like your health is put in jeopardy with the Biden administration? They are allowing it to be sprayed, and they've increased the allowable amount. So you're getting more chloroquat in your oats and other products like Cheerios. It's time to make health our priority and become a master survivor, folks. I'm telling you, with this Biden administration and Obama pulling the strings, he wants to destroy America and destroy you and destroy your health. You know, it's time to make your health your priority and become a master survivor, the simplest tools to use to have robust life of strength and health. Why is the core of the Master Survivor Program and the Master Survivor University based on life and philosophy of the medicine in ancient Greece? Why is that? Well, the quick answer is Dr. Johnny wants to preserve the teachings of Hippocrates. But there is a longer answer, and I will also reveal that answer. And we must remember that people in ancient Greece had a very major influence on how we live our Western life in many ways today, including in the areas of science, math, philosophy, astronomy, literature, theater, and medicine. The Greeks are known for the questions they asked about science and their abilities to apply logic to answers. Hippocrates was a Greek doctor who lived during those ancient times, and he had a major influence on the developmental medicine. He wrote many arguments and reports about disease, and he recommended treatments based on food and have formed foundations for our medical practices today. The Greeks developed math and science and medicine to a large extent. You'd be amazed. The ancient Greeks placed a strong emphasis on numbers because they thought that specific numbers had meanings. Alcmaeon was a scientific philosopher who connected the illness with people's lifestyle, nutrition, and even the environment. Greek people had enough money to give them the freedom to enjoy entertainment, culture, and impressive architecture in their buildings, especially during the Golden Age. Greeks were also very interested in science and mathematics, and they wanted to understand these concepts as philosophers considered matter and elements. Greek doctors began to delve into the possibility that medicine and religion were not intricately connected as the Egyptians believed they were. Very shrewd. Instead, they focused on repelling, instead of focusing on repelling evil spirits and to heal the sick, doctors in Greece began looking at physical cures to help their patients. Hippocrates was a Greek doctor who made many contributions to medicine. He founded the first school of medicine, which was the first place where medicine was separated from philosophy and religion. Instead of believing that illness happened as a punishment from the gods, Hippocrates suggested that people got sick because of how and where they lived and what they ate. Although Hippocrates did not understand a lot about anatomy and physiology, he believed in the importance of careful attention and technique as doctors treated their patients. Hippocrates was born in the Greek island of Kos, K-O-S, in the 5th century BCE, and he became the most famous physician in antiquity. He established a medical school on the island and wrote many treatises on medical matters, and that through his systematic and empirical investigations of diseases and remedies, is credited for being the founder of modern medicine. Information regarding Hippocrates is patchy and unreliable. He was perhaps born in 460 BCE, but details of his life were speculated upon even in ancient times. One of the oldest sources is the life of Hippocrates, credited to Saronus of Ephesus, himself a physician who lived in the 1st and 2nd centuries. Saronus' method of quoting from now lost earlier texts has been an invaluable source of information in ancient medicine. See, a lot of these things were passed down orally, and that's where Saronus got it, was from oral teachings from his early mentors. He states that Hippocrates knew several 5th century sophists, notably Gorgias of Leontini, and was taught medicine by both his father, which is Herodotus of Cerebria, who was a gymnastic trainer. He also knew that Hippocrates set up and ran a school of medicine on Kos, on the island of Kos. Plato mentions Hippocrates in his Plotochorus and suggested that he worked for fees and believed that the body should be treated as a whole. The Roman scholar and medical writer Coronius Celsus claims that Hippocrates was the first to separate medicine from philosophy and other ancient sources, and suggested that Hippocrates believed in the importance of diet and exercise for a healthy body. Saronus goes on to inform us that Hippocrates traveled throughout his life and died in Larissa in Thessalia in 370. Pardon me if I'm mispronouncing these Greek names. I'm not good at Greek. But in antiquity, many legends arise of Hippocrates' great talents. And we see many of those reports. He reportedly discovered that King Perdiccas II, Macedonia's health problems, were down to love sickness, and he eliminated the plague that hit Athens in 430 BCE by burning fires everywhere, and treated the philosopher Demetrius of whom everyone thought went mad, not without some justification because he was doing crazy things, but Hippocrates also had three sons who carried on his work, Theocelius, Diaconin, and Polybius. Hippocrates has long been credited with writing a large number of ancient treatises, speeches, and letters on medicine collectively referred to as the Hippocratic Corpus or Corpus Hippocraticum, which was compiled in the Hellenistic period in the Ptolemaic Alexandria, which is in northern Egypt. Modern scholars consider that on stylistic grounds alone, that these texts most actually have been written by multiple scholars and pointed out there was no reference to Hippocrates ever writing anything in sources contemporary with his lifetime. However, scholars there have concluded that many gathered material from passed down orally from what Hippocrates taught, and they, of course, put that together in the Corpus Hippocraticum. Scholars, therefore, hold the position that some of these texts were written by Hippocrates, but exactly which ones, they're still being debated. We may never know. But Hippocrates was definitely the spearheaded this movement of determining that our actions, our food, our diet, where we live, that determines more our health, not because the gods were angry. Hippocrates broke that new ground. 3rd century BCE corpus, edited again in the 1st century CE by scholars Diogradius and Copetaean. Several ancient writers, often famous physicians themselves, frequently wrote commentaries on works attributed to Hippocrates, amongst them the most notable, Herophilus of Chalcedon, 4th and 3rd century BCE, and Apollonius of Citium, the 1st century BCE, and Galen, the 2nd and 3rd century CE. Hippocratic texts deal with all manner of medical topics, but can be grouped into four main categories of diagnosis, biology, treatment, and general advice for doctors. There are over 60 treatises, which on specific topics, for example, joint therapy, regime, surgery, physiology, progression of diseases, purging remedies, and gynecology. The issues of ethics and medicine's relation to other subjects, especially philosophy, were also discussed. The famous Hippocratic Oath probably appeared after Hippocrates' lifetime and was reserved for a select group of doctors. It was actually a religious document ensuring a doctor operated within and for community values. With the oath, the practitioner swore by Apollo, Hygieia, and Panacea to respect their teacher and not to administer poison or abuse patients in any way, use a knife, or break the confidentiality between the patient and the doctor. Modern versions of this oath or similar such statements are still today sworn by many medical students around the world. The core of the Master Survivor Program is based on preserving what Hippocrates taught, and the ancient Greek health wisdom is all you need to change for the better and start getting healthy right away. Don't count on modern medicine to do that. All you need is an open mind and making a decision to be a master survivor. With just a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of effort is all it takes to turn your life completely around. As a laboratory naturopathic doctor, Dr. Johnny, for over 40 years of experience and as a professional in the health field, I want you to keep all your organs, have the tools for healing available at your fingertips to manage your own life and avoid disease. I work with 5 world-class analysis laboratories, and right now the Master Survivor is needed more than ever in America. Only 2 things you need to do to become a Master Survivor. This is, number one is the HTMA, the hair tissue mineral analysis. Number two is the 3Rs total gut restoration kit. You can get both right on my website, themastersurvivor.com, and scroll down and click on the Master Survivor program. And then you scroll down, you'll see number one, the hair tissue mineral analysis, and number two, the total gut restoration kit. Number one in the Master Survivor program is the hair tissue mineral analysis, HTMA, only $226. And we send your hair. I need a hair sample, a check from for $226, and I'll put it right in the lab queue in Trace Elements Laboratory in North Dallas to find the right foods to balance your cells. This valuable diagnostic shows the foods to avoid and the foods to increase on and get the minerals balanced in all 70 trillion of your cells. As brilliant as the Greeks were and as brilliant as Hippocrates was, they made many discoveries, but they did not know the chemistry. They did not have the laboratory. Today we do. So I take the best of all the Greek healing and diet and do the hair analysis test to show empirically what is right for your body based on your biochemistry. The diet therapy schedule is so effective that most doctors don't use it because they can't make money when their patients are getting well. But Dr. Johnny wants you to get well. He wants you not to get sick. He doesn't want you to keep coming back. I don't want your money. I want you to get well. I need money to pay the lab for the analysis. So $226 is what it takes for me to run your hair in the lab. So number two in the Master Survivor program is the 3Rs Total Gut Restoration Kit. It comes from the Microbiome Laboratories from St. Augustine, Florida, the other lab I work with, because this kit is the compilation of all the testing we did to find the best and most balanced way to get the microbiome, your gut, back into balance. We have the human studies showing the total gut restoration kit will balance the microbiome and get rid of leaky gut and candida in less than 9 months. More than half of our immunity response is in the gut, and by doing the four-month total gut restoration kit, your gut will be balanced and your immunity system goes way up. So the full Master Survivor program is one laboratory analysis, the hair tissue mineral analysis, and the total gut restoration kit, which is a compilation of all our human studies we've done to have the best kit to get your gut balanced. And it's the most effective natural recovery program available on the planet. Hippocrates would be proud. This is the full dietary roadmap that my patients use that comes from the labs I work with. It's all available. You can use your credit card right on my website, themastersurvivor.com. And you just scroll down and you'll see the Master Survivor program and click to read more. And number one is the hair tissue mineral analysis, and number two is the total gut restoration kit. If you have extra problems like HIV, or cancer, or all those things that people, you know, the mainstream medicine has told you are impossible to get over, well, you may want to choose number three, which is a premium consultation, where Dr. Johnny works with you for 2 years to get rid of any problems that you have in your body. That's $360. You can put it on your credit card as well. So number one is the hair tissue mineral analysis. Number two is the total gut restoration kit. Number three is the Master Survivor Program premium consultation. You can pay for all three with your credit card and get the best, most natural healing program found anywhere on the planet. No harm to your body, and yet you get well. That's my promise to you. Ask my patients. You don't have to take my word for it. Ask any of my patients. So, folks, I'm telling you, our government has been harassing not only us, you know, with these fires, with putting toxins in our food, with all the chemtrails, but, you know, this Department of Defense, this DARPA, this Pentagon, this CIA is also harassing Russia for years. And what's different now is the CIA and the media admit, they admit it now. They've come out and admitted it. I saw an article. I couldn't believe it. They admitted that they were harassing Russia. Putin publicly made this very clear in several interviews lately when he had his State of the Union address last week, that he's well aware of how U.S. presidents come and go, but the U.S. policy, he says, never changed. It's so true. Vladimir Putin. And I quote, he says, I've already spoken to three U.S. presidents. They come and go, but politics stay the same at all times. Do you know why, he says? Because of the powerful bureaucracy. When a person is elected, they may have some ideas. Then people with briefcases and suits will, arriving in dark suits, just like I'm wearing right now. And these people start explaining how things are done. And instantly everything changes. That's what happens with every administration, unquote, said Putin. He's right. Putin's well aware that it is the CIA that directs U.S. policy. It is the intelligence agencies of NATO countries who have been covertly instigating war with Russia for decades. In Tucker Carlson's interview at the Kremlin, President Putin seemed to be speaking directly to the CIA. And twice he playfully hinting that Tucker is a representative of the intelligence agency. Tucker Carlson said, with the backing of whom? Vladimir Putin said, with the backing of the CIA, of course, the organization you wanted to join back in the day, as I understand it. We should thank God they didn't let you in, although it is a serious organization, I understand, Tucker Carlson say. Who blew up Nord Stream pipeline? Vladimir Putin. You, for sure, Tucker Carlson said. I was busy that day. Do you think I did not blow up the Nord Stream pipeline. Thank you, but I didn't blow it up. Vladimir Putin. You personally may have an alibi, he said, but the CIA has no such alibi. And the CIA responded to Putin via New York Times media outlet in a recent article titled, The Spy War, How CIA Secretly Helps Ukraine Fight Putin. It was right there in the New York Times. That was the title of the article, The Spy War, How the CIA Secretly Helps Ukraine Fight Putin. The article admits that the CIA, operating through three different presidential administrations, has transformed the Ukraine into Washington's most important intelligence partners against the Kremlin. That's a quote from the article. Quote, Washington's most important intelligence partners against the Kremlin, unquote. They have secretly trained and equipped Ukrainian intelligence officers over the past decade and constructed a network of 12 secret bases along the Russian border used to launch cross-border attacks on the Russian territory. This means the CIA is responsible for the attacks on oil refineries and energy infrastructure. The article describes secret underground command centers established near the Russian border, financed and equipped by the CIA. A CIA program called Operation Goldfish enabled Ukrainians to hack into Russian military networks, break into satellites, and decode secret conversations. 2 years after the 2014 Western-backed coup in Ukraine, the Color Revolution, the CIA set up training programs for an elite Ukrainian commando force known as Unit 2245. The CIA trained Ukrainian spies who operated inside Russia, across Europe, and other places where Russia operates. The article points out, this is in the New York Times, just a week ago, that this operation may have been hidden from Trump. While Trump's rhetoric was friendly to Russia, his administration of anti-Russia war hawks such as Mike Pompeo and John Bolton kept Western aggression moving forward, which is what Putin keeps pointing out for years. Presidents come and go, but the policies never change. The article in New York Times says nothing about several biolabs that the U.S. admitted to having along the Russian border. Some of these labs were seized by Russian Federation, who said they were preparing to release a report on them, but so far haven't done so. Putin made it clear that Russia's actions in Ukraine was in response to decades of hostile U.S.-NATO military expansion on the Russian borders. And the CIA is now admitting this to be true right in the New York Times article that came out last week, right in the paper. So, folks, I was disturbed by all these revelations, because more and more they can't stop, you know, they keep lying to us, and then people are catching on more and more, and thank God people are waking up and studying all this and realizing that our Pentagon, the CIA, and DARPA, they're the ones that set up the vax. They're the ones that set up these toxins. They're the ones that set up these biolabs, making these vaccines and these strictly to kill people, these biological toxins. And there's much more that they're doing to destroy our country. Our own Defense Department is doing all these efforts to destroy our country from the inside. And it all's because it's a communist takeover from China. And I'm going to get into that after the break, because I have some interesting details that you need to hear, and you don't want to miss what Dr. Johnny has to say. So, I thought, maybe it's my clock is slow, but it looks like the break should be happening. So I don't want to force... Aha! I'll be back after these messages, folks.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
check in every Thursday night for the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show.
Studio A, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here at the number one listener-supported radio station, Revolution Radio.
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world. The best program on the radio for kids. Dealing with the most important topics in the whole universe. Fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plants, animals, fun, colors, insects. Take care and cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Just remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Step on into the Secret Kindergarten. Saturdays, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Revolution Radio.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's Ivan, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to the Master Survivor Beyond PhD, and this is Dr. Johnny, and I ask everybody to please help us get our new server so we can keep Dr. Johnny on the air and get into more networks and more coverage, and your donation would be very much appreciated. Just go to freedomslips.org and go to Patreon, and you can donate there and just put in italics for the new server, for the streaming server, and then that'll help us accomplish our goal, because we definitely want to get that underway. But folks, I was just telling you the last hour that we're being taken over. The whole United Nations goal is to get us under control, and the deep state goal. And China's kind of leading the way on that. And I read a disturbing article where the CCP is flooding America with illegal gun parts. And, of course, the Democrats, they just love it. I verified this with several contacts. The Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, are facilitating a massive flood of illegal gun parts into the U.S. to arm the hordes of illegal alien criminals who have invaded our country. Much like their strategy of poisoning the American cities with fentanyl, the CCP is using dangerous gun parts as a part of a larger disintegration warfare plan designed to tear the country apart from the inside. The CCP-linked companies have been connecting criminals in the states with things like Glock switches for the Glock pistol that's capable of turning the handguns into machine guns. You know, you may open the box and hear these little metal parts, but no one would really know what those metal parts are. But in a Glock, that part would turn it into a machine gun. And, of course, they're illegal for most gun owners. It is important to note that these switches are now ending up in the hands of your average law-abiding American citizen. Leaked federal law enforcement documents show that felons, criminal gangs, and now illegal aliens are using these Chinese-supported switches to transform America into a violent third-world hellhole. The switches are just about the size of a penny and started arriving in the United States in large quantities back in 2018. Criminals in the United States purchased them illegally from the CCP-backed websites that are in English designed to target Americans. With law enforcement having caught on to the Chinese method of simply shipping these parts into the United States via U.S. mail, the Chinese have shifted their tactics to smuggling them across the open wide border. Smugglers act as direct pipeline of all sorts, arming America's criminals and serious firepower to advance the communist plan, the Chinese plans. Drug cartels in America have also begun manufacturing the devices themselves through the use of machinery and equipment provided to them by none other than the Chinese government, and certainly not out of the kindness of their hearts. A Department of Homeland Security memo warned that the distribution of these devices concentrated in major cities, including Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, Detroit, Miami, Washington, New York, and Philadelphia, cities where radical leftist district attorneys have been installed and refused to hold violent criminals accountable. They just let them out. Beyond the switches, the Chinese government has also been importing firearm suppressors into American cities using the same tactics as the Department of Homeland Security, noting a massive surge since 2019. These are, you know, making a like silencers so you don't hear the shot. Needless to say, with criminals armed to the teeth with Chinese weapons, crime has been soaring all around America, and Democrats are actually happy about it. I can't make this stuff up, folks. The left-wing party points to crimes committed by these illegal Chinese guns as proof that the Second Amendment is just too dangerous, and suggests that it's time to get rid of it altogether and eliminate the Second Amendment and make all guns illegal. All while ignoring the fact that the criminals in possession of these Chinese-supplied weapons acquired them illegally with no amount of gun laws would have stopped them. And that could be the reason why President Biden has refused to even raise an issue with Beijing, bending over and letting the CCP continue to destroy America simply because Democratic Party agenda benefits from this scheme as well. What's more, Democrats ramp up election theft testing as presidential election nears. Voters left confused after being told their votes wouldn't be counted. It's become increasingly evident that the Democrats are using primary elections as a test run for their election rigging tactics, and yes, it's working. They still work. With Joe Biden falling further and further behind in the polls, Democrats have realized a Trump victory will be the only outcome in a fair election. But, of course, they have no interest in fairness, just power, so they're going to cheat. Just like in 2020, when Sleepy Joe magically received the most votes of any presidential candidate in history after 12:30 p.m. that night or a.m. that night, leftists are looking to deploy their fraudulent tactics once again to keep the old man in office and allow him to continue destroying America. well, Obama can't lose, you know, so that's what it's all about. However, the cheating leftists know that they will have more eyes on them this time around because their rigging efforts have to be perfect, and they hope to get away with it again. So the primary elections across the country have been their testing grounds for various cheating efforts. Over the weekend, South Carolina held its primary, which Donald Trump won easily, but something quite disturbing happened regarding several ballot tabulators, which left voters unable to cast their ballots. Isn't that funny? Their tabulators broke down. Countless ballot tabulators were completely out of service because, according to poll workers, the internet was not working. However, it's worth noting that ballot tabulators are not supposed to be connected to the internet. After 2020, when many people pointed out that many of the machines throughout the country appeared to have been hacked and had their votes tallies changed, the Democrats and the media told us that this was nonsensical conspiracy theory, given that the machines weren't even capable of connecting to the internet. Now we've been told that if the internet is down, these machines don't even work. So which is it? One primary voter revealed that a poll worker told him they don't have the internet, so he would have to take his paper ballot and fold it and slide it under the slot, and it looked kind of like a trash can. The voter then said he walked out scratching his head and noticed that there were a number of other voters who were just as confused as he was. If the machines are connected to the internet, then that confirms the theory suggesting the Democrats or their foreign allies could easily hack into tabulators and change votes in their favor. Even if they're not connected to the internet, this could be a shady tactic used by the Democrat allied poll workers to discourage voter turnout on election day when the vast majority of voters just so happen to be Republican. This, of course, comes after the incident took place in Nevada, where citizens were surprised to find that their mail-in ballots had been counted as votes toward the primary election, despite the fact that they were never actually participated in the election. The Democrats are not holding back. They knew, and they need some serious rigging to win 2024. And they're fine tuning their various methods to make sure they emerge victorious in the presidential election. Now the Democrats have taken it a step further by hiring illegal immigrants to police American citizens with firearms. I cannot make this stuff up, folks. I'll repeat that. Now the Democrats have taken it a step further by hiring illegal immigrants to police American citizens with firearms. In other words, these immigrants have firearms and they're policing American citizens. Gee, what could go wrong here? I wish this were not true, but this is their plan. Let's look at California. Los Angeles Democrats hired illegal aliens to be tasked with policing Americans, putting guns in the hands of non-American citizens, and giving them the power to enforce laws after they broke the law themselves, beginning with illegals who were in America under the Deferred Action Child Arrivals, DACA, status. The Los Angeles Police Department has decided to turn these lawbreakers into lawmen. And this is just a start. In 2012, then President Barack Obama issued an order allowing DACA illegals to stay in the country indefinitely, unable to be deported. So if they mysteriously show up in their country, they're under, you know, the Deferred Action Childhood Arrivals. They could be 22 years old, but they're still under DACA status. And then In 2012, Barack Obama issued an order allowing DACA illegals to stay in the country indefinitely, unable to be deported. So once they get in, they're in. At the time, this was highly controversial because it allows these individuals to remain living in the country as foreign citizens for as long as they want after admitting to entering the country illegally. So they can say, I'm an illegal alien, and boom, they'll get all those special benefits. Now, after the left is very calculated, you know, to defund the police and all those movements earlier on in the George Floyd riots and create a massive police shortages just in time for millions of illegal immigrants to bring with them violent crime crisis to America, Democrats have a new solution to the problem. The policing problem they've created, how convenient. They can hire illegals as police to help out police. I can't make this stuff up, folks. I wish I was lying, but prove me wrong. In 2022, California Democrat-dominated state legislature passed a law authorizing any of the illegal border crossers to obtain work authorization to join the police force. This included DACA recipients. Some cities in the state are rightfully concerned about hiring criminals who entered this country illegally to police over American citizens, but the cesspool that is Los Angeles was not concerned at all and have many illegals already in uniform and armed on the force. The Los Angeles Police Department put guns and badges in the hands of roughly a dozen DACA recipients last month, according to the captain on the force. These officers will possess department-issued firearms on and off duty. It's worth noting that the Second Amendment, which gives American citizens the right to bear arms, does not apply to illegals. And by issuing guns to these DACA recipients, the leftists in Los Angeles might quite literally be breaking the law. In fact, the Democrats themselves passed a law in 1968 which prohibits illegally present foreign citizens from possessing firearms and ammunition. DACA recipients have been determined to not be exempt from this law. So even though it was a Democrat law they passed in 1968, well, these DACA recipients on the force are exempt from that law. The Los Angeles Police Department has also more illegals in training right now who have added to the force once they've completed. All this to say that the Democrats have been attacking real American police officers for years only to be able to replace them with illegal immigrants led into the country by Joe Biden, who have admitted on video that they are loyal to Joe Biden. Oh, yeah. What are they really up to here? Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure it out. Meanwhile, as trends to be on the move to with any of the Democrats, more radical policies, California is just the testing ground for this plan to install illegals in our police departments all over the country in the major cities. Like in, say, Michigan with Gretchen Whitmer. She wants to do it too. So does the governor in New York. And it doesn't stop there, folks. Joe Biden's already been conditioning people to get used to having millions of potentially dangerous illegal immigrants around, having his White House change the terminology used to refer to illegal border crossings to be more welcoming. The White House now refers to illegal immigrants as newcomers and people who are in this country with the explicit purpose of trying to normalize their existence. Joe Biden's Department of Health Security, DHS, has been barred from using terms like illegal aliens or illegal immigrants. They can't say that. You know, in favor of more inclusive terms, of which, again, are designed to trick the American people into thinking it's normal and to let millions of unvetted illegals stay in this country forever, carry guns, and wear a uniform as police. I can't make this stuff up, folks. And as this forced normalization continues, we will see more and more instances of cities putting guns in the hands of these illegals and granting them the power to police the American people. To be clear about what's happening here, the Democrats are flooding America with millions of criminal border crossers and giving them weapons with the power to crack down on anybody who dares to push back on a clearly out-of-control government that is betraying its own people. Let's be clear. This is what's going on. Well, Dr. Johnny's been very concerned, and he's also concerned about our education system because the left are corrupting that as well. Last week, I reported on woke kindergarten. And since adapting these new guidelines, learning and intellectual skills of our children are all-time low. But what about higher education? Well, it's not doing so well either. You must understand that your taxpayer dollars are funding these policies that actually make our children dumber, kinder through grade 12, as well as higher education. Right now, let's look at an article this week by Jay Green, PhD, from Heritage Foundation, and it's titled, Poison Ivy League, How Taxpayers Subsidize Wealth Universities. His title of this article, he's a very sharp guy, is called, the title is Poison Ivy League, How Taxpayers Subsidize Wealth Universities. The federal government provides enormous subsidies to wealthiest universities in the country. People may imagine that the bulk of these subsidies access low-income students in covering high and rising costs of attending, like books and those universities. But it's not what the federal government primarily funds. The largest type of subsidy that wealthy universities receive is in the form of payments for overhead costs on federal research grants. During the fiscal year of 2022, Ivy League universities received $1.8 billion, that's with a B, for overhead on government funding research grants. That represents 84% of the total amount of government subsidy these universities receive. Research grants are not subsidies because every dollar received has to be spent according to the terms of the grant. But for every dollar Ivy League universities receive for research, they charge the government an additional 64 cents on average for overhead. Ostensibly, overhead covers things such as costs of the building where the research takes place and electricity that keeps the lights on, but universities do not have to account for the use of these funds for overhead. They can be used for virtually any purpose that the university administrators prefer, and as past research has demonstrated, these discretionary uses of overhead funds include building diversity, equity, inclusion, which is DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, building DEI, building diversity, equity, inclusion, building DEI bureaucracies, and indulging whatever other ideological activity they wish. The money that directly funds research may not be a subsidy, but the overhead, or it's often called indirect money, is clearly a subsidy because it almost entirely fungible and unaccountable. the 8 universities in the Ivy League receive $1.8 billion, with a B, each year from taxpayers, despite the fact that these universities are sitting on a $192 billion, with a B, in endowment funds. If they need money for buildings and electricity, donors have already given them plenty. There's no need for taxpayers to give the richest universities $1.8 billion each year to cover the cost of buildings that their donors have already enabled them to maintain and update with more money to spare. It makes no sense for taxpayers to continue to subsidize the construction of new research infrastructure at wealthy universities unless there's a specific jurisdiction, such as supporting the construction of a particular telescope or laser or particle accelerator. Give me a break, folks. Giving taxpayer money to wealthy universities has been plenty of resources for the buildings, laboratories, and maintenance. Is simply providing these institutions with a slush fund that they can use for any purpose, including those hostile to taxpayers' preferences and interests. Just as the tax code often phases out subsidies such as the child tax credit for wealthier individuals, the government program that fund university research could phase out the provision of overhead funding for wealthier universities. Arguably, universities with more than $5 billion in endowment do not require any money from the taxpayers to build and maintain research infrastructure. And perhaps the rate of overhead could be capped at 15 cents for every dollar meant for research for universities with more than $2 billion. More than $2 billion in endowment and significantly less than the overhead rates in excess of 60 cents, not common at universities. There's no reason to fear a massive abandonment of research if taxpayers fail a lavish extra money for overhead on the universities that already have research infrastructure. The universities have reputational reasons to conduct research, even if doing so does not generate a slush fund for administrators. And there is a reason to hope in redirecting overhead subsidies outside of a few dozen universities that are too rich to need it and might help spread research expertise more evenly around the country, improving educational and economic opportunities in large parts of the country that currently have their best researchers hired away to the coasts by the richest universities. Well, capping and eliminating overhead subsidies is likely to be a broader popular topic. The only opposition is most likely to come from the highly paid administrators and researchers at wealthy universities that, of course, take a cut. But universities and researchers at other institutions would be helped or unaffected because their overhead funding would not change or might increase. Those interested in maximizing the benefits of government funding research would also be helped or unaffected because the nation's total capacity to produce research would remain unchanged or expand. And most importantly, taxpayers would benefit by no longer having to pay for unaccountable slush funds at wealthy universities that do not need the money to begin with. The origin and purpose of overhead on research grants, the federal government began systematically funding scientific research universities following World War II, and several federal agencies pay for this research, including the National Science Foundation, National Institutes of Health, you know, that's a Fauci operation, the Office of Naval Research, and U.S. Department of Education. From the beginning, federal sponsors of research provide such funds for overhead with their research grants. Now, you know, I just told you some of the main research went to the National Science Foundation, National Institutes of Health. Well, the National Institutes of Health was run by Dr. Fauci And that's how we came up with AIDS. All that extra money was funding all that research for AIDS and the COVID jab and everything else. This is why I'm bringing this up, folks, because all these slush funds have gone into other areas that I don't think as U.S. citizens are well aware of. This, our research dollar, you know, the research dollars from our taxpayer dollars paid for, you know, AIDS when they, that's an invented disease, you know, the Ebola strains, those are invented. And of course the COVID, you know, RMMA, you know, in the vaccines, those are all in the graphene oxide. All that research is paid for our taxpayer. I'm telling you how they get that money right now. At first, the rate was capped at 8%, meaning that for every dollar supporting itemized research costs, universities could get an additional 8 cents to cover the fixed cost of building and maintenance research infrastructure. The cap was raised 15% and then 20%. In 66, the cap was removed, and universities were simply allowed to set rates based on an arbitrary cost formula that is easily inflated but provides not much objectivity or technical responsibility, and so it's a slush fund. Once the cap was removed, the rate university charged for overhead rose dramatically, of course, because they're not checked, so they keep raising the price to get more money. A lot of those administrators take a cut, so that by 1990, the rate at Stanford was 70%. A series of scandals revealed that these overhead funds are being used for things such as yachts, redecorating offices of university administrators. Rates dropped below 50% before creeping up over 60% again in recent years. So I'm telling you, it's this slush fund. The administrators take their cut and they do whatever they want and have vacations. There is no question that research activity involves both direct costs that can be attributed to a specific project and indirect costs that have been spread across the entire set of research activities at a university. And the amount required for these indirect and overhead costs is ambiguous and is clearly varied and is dramatically over time. Universities that have less private support may need public assistance in building and maintaining their research infrastructure if it's a priority to increase total research activity. But universities that have generous private support, as indicated by various large endowments, do not require public assistance, but they're getting away with it anyway, and they already have significant research capacity. I must have eaten a spicy meatball, excuse me. To put it in perspective how rich universities are, Harvard's endowment of $53 billion, that's with a B, exceeds the gross domestic product of 124 countries, including Tunisia, Uganda, Bolivia, and Estonia. And the $192 billion that they have collected is greater than the entire annual budget of 48 states. Only California and New York spent more than what the Ivy League has in the bank. So, I mean, Harvard, you know, $53 billion every year. I mean, this is like unbelievable. With endowments that big, they have enough funding to build and maintain research infrastructure. And given the nonprofit status of these universities, have been granted to pursue the discovery and dissemination of knowledge, they have an objection to use of resources, objective use of resources, and are obligated to maintain their research and infrastructures if taxpayers do not provide them with additional funds for that purpose. Now, folks, I'm showing you what our universities are doing. You say you get this big education, yet the student comes out totally woke and voting for the left all the way around and wanting to get their sex changed. They're getting indoctrinated that, and then they're requiring them to get the vaccines. They're still requiring them to wear a mask at these Ivy League universities. That's why I started the Master Survivor University. If you want a real education about real health, it's not the Fauci health, which is poisoning your body, go to themastersurvivor.com. Scroll down and click on the Master Survivor University and check it out and have a thriving new career as a Master Survivor Health Professional. That's why I started this university, because our universities are corrupt and our children are coming out worse than ever. They're not getting an education and they're becoming more and more woke, wanting to change their sex gender. So when we look at all this, the information and the resources in Ivy League universities have at their disposal, the private donations as well as government funding is readily available. The U.S. Department of Education Digest of Educational Statistics report that 120 largest university endowments as of the end of the year 2021, all 8 universities in the Ivy League rank among the top 26 in terms of size of their endowments. And as we can see, the Ivy League endowments range from $53 billion for Harvard to $6.5 billion for Brown University. In a total, there are 32 universities that had more than $5 billion in endowment as of the end of 2021, and a total of 70 universities had more than $1 billion or more. Information on the extent of government subsidies for Ivy League universities, including the amount they receive for overhead on government research grants, is available from the institution profiles in the United States Department of Education Integrated Post-Secondary Education Data System. Those profiles contain information on student financial aid, enrollment, and finances for each of the Ivy League universities. And of course, the student ends up paying for the rest of their life on loans they borrowed on these student loans. And yet, these universities have plenty of money to pay and to help students provide for their education. I think only one has actually come out, and I hope it sets a trend, where the Albert Einstein University is now, you can go there. If you're accepted into their medical school, you can go there free of charge. But I digress. You know, that's the only one. I hope that's a trend. I hope, see, all these universities, when, you know, some place like Harvard gets more than $52 billion for Harvard, even $6.5 billion for Brown. You know, they don't have that many students. They could cover their tuition for all the students. So, so far, just this past year, you know, it's toward the beginning of February, Albert Einstein University announced that their students can go free of charge to medical school. I hope it sets a trend, because the other universities is highway robbery of our taxpayer dollars. Plain and simple. Prove me wrong. The profiles for each university describe the percentage of students receiving aid, including Pell Grants, and the average dollar amount of that aid, multiplying enrollment by the percentage of students receiving aid and by the average dollar amount of that aid provides the total amount of government aid assisted students for each university. Similarly, the profiles describe the percentage of students receiving student loans and average amount of those loans. Since loans are only partially subsidized, given that under most circumstances students need to pay them back, the Congressional Budget Office has estimated that roughly 26% of loan amounts should be considered subsidies. Multiplying the enrollment by the percentage of students receiving loans, the average amount of those loans, and 26% produces the total value of assistance to students in a form of government loans. The profile also lists the amount of government grants and contracts per student. Multiplying that by the full-time enrollment yields, the total amount of government grants and contracts, isolate the portion that the amount for is for overhead, and the rate each college charges for overhead can be obtained for each university's website. So this data is available, and I did a deep dive finding out what was really going on, and I'm bringing those results to you here now. The results of all these calculations, you know, the amounts of the Ivy League universities receive for overhead on research grants range from $55 million for Dartmouth to $475 million for Columbia. In total, these eight universities annually receive $1.8 billion for overhead and research grants, averaging $225 million for each Ivy League institution. The amount of subsidies these universities receive for overhead on research grants dwarfs the amount they receive from government to subsidize student attendance. The amount each university receives in aid and loan subsidies ranges from $14 million for Dartmouth to $82 million for Columbia, and the total of eight Ivy League universities receive $344 million for student aid and subsidies to loans, compared to $1.8 billion for overhead on government research grants. Of all the government subsidies, these universities receive 84% of it comes in the form of overhead on government research grants, and only 16% in the form of aid for loans to students. So students are the ones left out of this game, where the administrators just keep filling their pocket, folks. Some have noticed that the outsized endowment of these and other similar universities propose a number of reforms to ensure that these institutions are not simply operating as tax advantage hedge funds with small universities attached. Well, they are. Okay. Some have advanced sensible solutions, such as removing the tax exemption for rent or fee-based dorms, dining halls, and other activities that are effectively apartment and restaurant business that are not necessarily for teaching and research purposes of a nonprofit university or organization. Others have wondered whether it might be desirable to tax those endowments where they are fully being used for public benefit. Taxing endowments, however, sets a bad precedent for expanding asset wealth taxes more broadly, which is generally undesirable economically and can be easily become confiscatory. Before considering taxing university endowments, the government should significantly curtail providing additional taxpayer subsidies for the purposes that the endowments can already cover. The largest type of government subsidy is overhead for government research grants. If that subsidy were eliminated for 32 universities with more than $5 billion in endowment and capped with an overhead rate of 15%, for 38 universities with between $2 billion and $5 billion in endowment, taxpayers would save several billion dollars each year by avoiding paying for something that those wealthy universities can already purchase for themselves. Doing this would not reduce the total amount of research being conducted at the university, but it might reallocate some of it away from a few dozen richest universities primarily located on the coast and toward the hundreds of universities capable of research spread throughout the country. Under the current administration and the current system, the Ivy League universities can use their large endowments to attract many promising researchers working at less wealthy universities. In exchange for that modest investment in salaries, the Ivy League and other wealthy universities lock up billions in taxpayer subsidies to themselves over and above their research costs. concentrating researchers across multiple disciplines. It's just a handful of rich universities, and not that they're not in the public interest, folks. They're just stealing our taxpayer money blind. Having these researchers more evenly dispersed throughout the country allows more students to benefit from education of leading scientists and opportunities to participate in their research. This would be perfect. Dr. Johnny thinks this is great because it won't be such a brain drain for the flyover states instead of just having them in New York or Stanford, San Francisco, or like that. We can have them all over, whether it be, you know, Georgia Tech, or whether it be, you know, a university in Iowa. However, in addition to economic benefits of this research activity being, you know, all over, and just, you know, the economic benefits of this research activity being concentrated in a handful of coastal cities and those few rich universities and surrounding communities, are only getting richer with the help of taxpayer dollars. It's just a never-ending revolving door of siphoning our money off. In addition, research grant overhead provides university administrators with slush funds to indulge ideological pet projects such as building larger DEE, you know, diversity and equity engagement, you know, bureaucracies. Having large slush funds at already wealthy Ivy League universities has greatly contributed to the campus extremism and the radicalism that has shocked much of the country following the October 7th attack by Hamas on Israeli citizens. As previous research has demonstrated, you know, this diversity and equity bureaucracies exacerbate anti-Semitism. So they've got the Jews mad, so they're saying, hey, look at the money. In general, organizations that have too much money in their hands and virtually no accountability have a tendency to indulge in foolish and sometimes dangerous ideas that only an academic could love. Nobody else will appreciate them. So we should stop subsidizing this nonsense, folks. The government can curtail nonsense, save taxpayer dollars, and reallocate research studies more evenly throughout the whole country by eliminating capping research overhead funding to these wealthiest universities. And folks, I'm just telling you, this is these social media platforms and this social justice, you know, extremism they're pushing on us. Could not be pointed out more clearly than Amazing Polly, but I can't probably go into her whole, but I'll go into a bit. Amazing Polly, you know, if anyone wants to get the dirt on what the deep state's doing, it's Amazing Polly, and I watched her full video, and it was long, but I took notes, and Amazing Polly does a very deep and detailed dive on what she calls the new narrative gatekeeper network. And a new spate of social media purchases by tech oligarchs of how all our free speech heroes in the tech space are just leading us toward the same digital dystopia that Klaus Schwab is. Amazing Polly says people are calling Elon one of us without understanding that he doesn't even own these companies like the way we think he does, nor does he have sole ownership title or decision making over them. And we're talking about Tesla, Starlink, Neuralink, and X.com, which used to be Twitter. She points out that similarly how BlackRock and Vanguard own everything evil, including each other, there is an interlocking group connected to the PayPal mafia and the intellectual dark web that is scooping up all of those up-and-coming alternative media platforms, and this group stands for the Fourth Industrial Revolution just as much as the Economic Forum does. They tout themselves as bringing this new smart system, but that's exactly what the World Economic Forum wants to do. where you own nothing and you'll be happy. Amazing Polly explains that Musk, Elon Musk, doesn't have say because of those people in the background, and I'm going to go over some of them with you today. She's went over a lot of these, and the ones that are pulling the strings, I mean virtual capital, private equity funds, people that in some cases never, even though having a hand in what we say online, they do have a hand in the data that comes out back to us. But what I'm hoping to show you is that there is a huge plan, and a lot of the venture capitalists and the tech share, they share an ideology that they share is really, really similar to what's coming out of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and the Great Reset, the Fourth Industrial Revolution goals coming out of the World Economic Forum. She says it's all the same usual suspects. Amazing Polly thinks that their declarations about colonizing Mars and hundreds of billions of dollars that they're putting into life extension technologies like this Neuralink are just the proverbial pizza shop or the front for an actual operation, which is really about digitizing all our body processes, all our cell signaling that goes into producing our heartbeats, our consciousness, our digestion, etc., in order to bring in their new version of government, which Amazing Polly says is going to be sort of like how the computers on Wall Street, the high-frequency trading algorithms, how they can gather millions of points of data once and they decide on the future, then they can say, okay, that's a good bet, and then make it so, and then that's not a good bet, and then make it so. They want people like that. That's how they're planning to govern us. And if that sounds way out there, you just have to read about it and see between the lines, Amazing Polly says. I believe her. She's totally right. So I'm concerned when I watch the alternative media being bought up or entering into partnerships with entities that these whose motives I suspect, and one of these is Rumble, she says. This is just going to be because I really want to get into the people who have helped Elon Musk buy X next, she says. But Rumble started off as a Canadian company, but over time it became public, and then Peter Thiel invested a lot in it. And we're also seeing the Colt Capital and Nerva were similar fund and similar separate funders at the same time Thiel made his initial investment. But actually, if you just pull back the curtain, both Colt Ventures and Nerva were directly related to Peter Thiel. They all work for him. He helped set up their companies, and I think they might be on each other's boards, or they were. But anyway, I know that J.D. Vance worked for Peter Thiel, and the guy who owns Colt Ventures is also a big wig at Turning Point USA. So you can see some of the consolidation already there. It's all the same players. And then you have got Locals, and Locals was a separate thing, ostensibly begun by Dave Rubin of Intellectual Dark Web. He was originally going to do this in partnership with Jordan Peterson, and then Jordan Peterson had to go into a coma. Remember that? Well, that was an accident. That was set up. Locals got developed by Dave Rubin, but really, really, it was the guy who called Asraf Lev an Israeli. Anyway, a bunch of social media personalities went over to Locals, and they started their own platform. But in the short order, Locals partnered with Rumble, and so this was bought out, and they bought out all the investors, and under Rumble, and David Sachs got a seat on the board on Rumble, and Asraf Lev also did too. These people are scooping up all the alternative social media platforms because they need them to train their AIs, the ones which they intend to replace our government and our law enforcement with, as Amazing Polly says, literally want to replace human decision-making with a greater good society, you know, with cops that aren't even Americans, okay? Catching my point? Because they're just doing what they're told. Oh, go kill those people, and they'll go and do it. Oh, go arrest those people, and they'll go do it. But then this greater good society consensus machine type interface for democracy, she goes on the gory details of how all this works, and I could go into all of it with you, but basically these guys are deluded utopians, she says, and they're all part of the World Economic Forum goal, and most of the stuff I don't know it's already come to pass, but it will for real. And so what we're going to have is something that will fall right before your eyes, and we're either going to have to go into their future or what they're trying to make happen, or going to have to put the brakes on to make this realistic and make this real, because most people don't realize their minds are being manipulated. So they'll totally have you under mind control if they get all this. So regulators are going to have to get in there fast, and especially shut down some of these biotech research that's going on. Because newsflash, politicians and regulators these days, your days are numbered. You're going to be written out of this completely, bankers, you too, by AI. And then where do the people fall into all this? Well, we're just useless eaters. So if you are a dissident, then if you are a dissident, then they'll just have an illegal alien police cop pick you up, put you in jail, and put you in the FEMA camp. I can't make this stuff up, folks. It's time to become a master survivor. And that's how you can save yourself from this mind control, is becoming a master survivor. If you become a master survivor, Dr. Johnny can promise you, you will not get sick and you will not suffer from the mind control. That is my promise from you. Just ask any of my patients. Just go to themastersurvivor.com and become a master survivor today. Just scroll down and click on the Master Survivor Program and get started. Number one, hair tissue mineral analysis. Have a good week, everybody. Dr. Johnny, over and out.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
A time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. Can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the case of the people who run it, to the people who own it. And unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You call down the thunder, well, now you've got it. Right.
You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Friday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law, spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers.